Welcome to Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast, a podcast focused on all forms of photography and the people who love to create. If you love cameras, analog or digital, old or new, expensive or economical, we welcome you here with open arms. Hello, and welcome to episode 92. Welcome back, Trevor, and I still can't say your last name, so I'll let you do it.
It's Trevor Monnier. Thank you, Sherry.
I'm not even going to go there. I know I failed miserably last time. So. And Trevor, you are also living out in the country, and I know you have some horses to feed early in the morning, which sounds not fun in the winter.
I enjoy it, actually. But yes, we're on acreage as well. It's peaceful and quiet in the morning. And I actually even like it when it's really cold out, because, you know, all those clumps of manure stick together and they're easier to pick up.
And they don't stick to your boots, do they?
Well, that's it.
However, you do have to watch you don't trip on them.
True.
Yep, don't want to catch a black eye from a herd turd.
Yeah, don't ask how I know this, since we don't have any animals.
Black Eye from a Hard Turd would be a great album.
Okay, are you going to write that?
I'm luckily not musical.
Great name for a punk band.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, Trevor is also a large format photographer. So we thought we would have him on because basically I know nothing about large format, and it's a topic that I thought maybe we should be covering. So.
Yeah, it's funny, actually. I think last time we spoke, I was mostly just starting out doing film, doing 35 millimeter stuff. So it's morphed rather quickly in the past couple of years into some larger format goodness. And I'm just in love with it. Like, it's almost replaced my digital entirely. I'm in a hybrid workflow now, but the digital image is really just to capture the negative that I create with large format.
Right, right. I bet you have a really large negative with that. About how big is it? I'm sorry, I'm showing my ignorance. I have no idea.
So I have a few cameras, the most portable being a little wooden Negoke of 4x5, so that's 4-inch by 5-inch negative. But I do also have a 5x7, a 4x10, and an 8x10 to get some different negative sizes. The 8x10 I typically only use for if I'm doing 8x10 contact prints. So that would be sort of a fully analog process. A good friend of mine has a 4x5 and larger, so I will use that. Currently don't have the room for that setup at my place. I mean, my dark room is a bathroom duct tape shut with a safe light plugged in. So I do all my developing in there. And it's actually, it works out really well. A lot of people consider large format photography to be sort of really expensive, and it can be, just like any sort of photography. But if you get an affordable body and some affordable lenses, 4x5, you can get some really cheap film. I mean, traditional panchromatic films, like even the black and white stuff, like HP5, is still rather expensive. But there's some ortho style films that are used for analog reproduction of documents and things that are actually very high contrast, but also you're good to develop and load them under red safe light. So that's my go-to film, specifically Arista Ortholitho 3.0, and there's an Inkpress Royal Regent Hard Dot, both of which are ISO 3. And develop really quickly, and you can load and develop under safe light, and I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet that you don't have to fumble around in the dark when you're loading up your film holders.
Well, yeah, that, and I love developing my inspection too. It's really handy not having to guess.
Yeah, it must be pretty awesome to see it kind of materialize in front of your eyes.
Go ahead,
Sherry.
I was just, you had mentioned it was ISO 3.
Yes, very slow.
Okay, so is that something that's normally for large format, or is that just what you prefer?
I mean, large format films you can get in most film stocks, you know, like anything Ilford, you can essentially get in large format. So you've got speeds between 50 and 400. I don't think they do Delta 3200 or anything faster. But Kodak, you can get all the portraits and everything. So, I mean, all standard film types you can get with large format. I just use this stuff because it's really cheap. And when I say really cheap, like, I think 50 sheets of 4x5 is about $10 US. It's very affordable.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
That's cheap compared to a box of VHP5.
Well, yeah, exactly. So you can experiment, and it's, you know, you've got so much latitude to play around. If you mess up a shot, you're not wasting much money at all.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, a good way to experiment and learn your craft.
Mm-hmm. Well, that for sure. And I mean, I also combine it with, I'm still doing Cafenol as a developer, being on a septic system. I just like to not have to deal with too many chemicals. So really the only chemical I buy is Ilford Rapid Fixer, and bottle that up when it's expired. But I'm using a Cafenol process, tray developing under safe light. And it's really easy. And the other nice thing about these films is they develop really quickly. I mean, a traditional black and white Pancro film will develop in, you know, roughly 10 minutes in Cafenol, depending on the speed. But this will develop in a minute or two at most. So it's a really, really fast to churn out, you know, even if you have a dozen sheets to develop, it's really quick.
Yeah, no, that's really speedy.
Have you tried films that weren't made for photography?
I have not yet. I do plan to start using some X-ray films, but I have a lot of stock to use up already, so I haven't quite gone there. Cyanotype is something as well that I want to try. I suppose it's used for photography, but I've also been playing around with some expired dry plates that I have for 5x5.
Oh, yeah. That's fascinating.
Have you ever tried like the glass ones?
Well, that's exactly it. So yeah, I have some expired Kodak glass dry plates. I forget what exactly it is, but it's like some Tri-X style stuff from the 70s. It's shooting really slow now. It used to be quite fast, but now it's shooting around ISO 5. But I was able to actually pick them up from the local camera store, Camera Traders in Perth. Camera Trading Company, I should say. Got traded a 4x5 for 5 boxes of it that Mark had sitting around, and I've been playing with that. It's awesome.
Yeah, why not for the price?
You're always good at swapping that stuff out. I know I always called you my camera enabler.
Well, I like to try new things, and the best way to do that is to get something new, see how it works, and then swap it out if you're not using it. That's sort of how I've found my way to large format, and I'm really grateful I've been trying all sorts of stuff, and you know, stuff doesn't sit on the shelf too long and collect dust, which you know, I sort of feel guilty about if things are just sitting there doing nothing.
Yeah.
Now I'm fascinated by a 4x10 camera. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I was fascinated by it as well. I really wanted sort of I do like panoramic, I do like wide lenses, and it's sort of a combination of those things in a large format style. And I mean, majority of panoramic cameras, I mean, any sort of panoramic cameras, very expensive. You know, you're looking at like your X-Pans or any of the 617s, anything with a lens on it is very expensive. But the 4x10, I actually found a manufacturer in the States that makes them new for a much more reasonable price compared to everything else. So it's literally, it's half an 8x10. It's a field camera. So you cut a sheet of 8x10 in half and
right.
Yeah, you get a panchromatic negative or panoramic negative. I'm getting my words mixed.
So it's not just your 8x10 camera with a mask. It's a purpose-built 4x5. I mean, 4x10.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, it's purpose-built 4x10, so you get the weight and size savings of that, which is fantastic.
Yeah, that's quite neat.
Because, I mean, my 8x10 is an old Calumet green monster, I think they call it, which it's a real hefty magnesium cast camera that, while it folds up and is considered a field camera, I certainly wouldn't want to go hiking with it.
Yeah, it'd be quite a workout.
Yeah, I have some serious respect for Ansel Adams after doing some large format shooting. The fact that he was lugging an 8x10 around Yosemite is impressive.
Yeah, that dude must have been in good shape, that's for sure. What sort of brought you towards large format in the first place?
I wanted the ability to make larger prints. I've always sort of been interested in making big prints. So having a large negative is one step in that direction for sure. Yeah. And also too, I've always liked the analog process. So it's the combination of those things. Eventually when I have a darkroom set up at home, I'd like to be doing some larger format analog prints, and possibly even making some cameras for large format tin types, you know, greater than 8x10 in size. But that's a long-term project. Right now I'm sort of focusing on the large format negatives and then digitizing it at high resolution and creating like very large format prints on the order of, you know, 4 foot by 5 foot with high detail and then fine resolution. It's sort of Bertinsky style and where you can walk up to it and see all the detail that you normally wouldn't do in a print that size.
Right. Yeah. And the larger negative size would definitely help with that. You get all the detail you can squeeze out of the film.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, Bertinsky's shooting, in his previous days was shooting 4x5 and making the 4 foot by 5 foot prints from 4x5 negatives. So, I mean, there's precedent there. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Doing it in a roundabout way. I don't have the facilities to make prints with an analog process like that.
Yeah, I can imagine an enlarger that can do like an 8x10 is probably has quite a footprint.
Yeah, I mean, Bessler 4x5 enlarger, I think, without rotating it and doing a projection on the wall, you can do, what is it? How big was the print that we did? I think it's a 16 by 20 on that order anyways, you know, fairly large size print.
Yeah, that was pretty dang big.
So, I mean, you also have to have a tray that you can fit that print in and you get the paper and everything. So, you know, there's a lot of details there to deal with, I mean, that's the interesting thing about cyanotype, and that's why I sort of want to dig into it later when I have my own setup going, is because you can just use regular paper and paint the cyanotype onto that paper. So you're not having to buy paper directly from, say, Ilford or whatnot. Right. That's still just a plan in the back of my head. We haven't gone there yet.
Yeah, something to think about going forward.
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
So for someone who is just thinking about getting into it, what advice would you have for them?
If you're looking to get the large format photography, I mean, a field camera is what everyone wants. And if you want to go with a field camera, probably the best thing you can go for is an older Graflex. Just cost-wise, it won't have all the movements of most field cameras, but it's compact package, and lots of them out there. It's relatively affordable, and they're easy to use. Either that, or you can get a technical monorail camera. But the real problem with those is the weight and portability. They're great cameras. It's just, you know, if you're not in the studio, it's cumbersome to be lugging those around. There are some lighter style ones, specifically made by Cinar, that are worth looking into. But Intrepid, I mean, I've seen some really good Intrepids out there. Like, they make a nice camera for a reasonable price. But I mean, the simplicity of a large format camera, it's like anything old is just as good as anything new if the bellows are in good shape. There's not much to it.
Right.
And the bellows are replaceable as well, I guess, if you run into some issues there.
I mean, depending on the condition, electrical tape is your best friend. There's lots of ways to fix bellows and repair pinholes. But my main 4x5 shooter, it's a wooden Negaoka, and it's still got the original bellows on it, but I've patched it up here and there with electrical tape. I do have replacement bellows, but I haven't had to swap them out yet. So.
Yeah, if you're getting by with electrical tape, why not?
Well, exactly. So
are you using the brush-on tape, or are you using actual, as I would call it, black tape on a roll?
I'm using the black tape on a roll. I've heard a lot of people talk really good things about the liquid electrical tape, though I haven't tried it myself. It's not all that sophisticated. It is fabric, you know. It's anything that works. I've used black duct tape as well, you know. As long as it'll fold up, it's whatever you can find that works.
Yeah, that's the thing about the liquid electrical tape. You really got to be careful where you apply it, because it can make your bellows quite rigid if you don't.
Yeah, that's why I've shied away from it. Like, I like the, if you just have a few pinholes to deal with, I find that just regular black electrical tape works really well. I mean, it may not hold up to really faster speed film, but for the slow stuff I'm using, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, and it's nice and flexible too, so you don't have to worry about your bellows not collapsing.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's the camera side of things. Lenses are a whole other story. I mean, for people who aren't familiar, you know, 150 millimeter lens on 4x5 is roughly equivalent to a 50 millimeter lens. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea. So it's to start out, a 150 is a pretty common size to get, and relatively affordable depending on what you get. So that's a good starter package for sure.
Is there a good resource online that explains like the lens ratios to the cameras for the complete novice?
I don't know one in particular. Usually when I need to look at a reference chart, I just Google large format equivalent focal lengths, and there's lots of charts out there. The better ones also list 5x7, but the majority of them will list 8x10, 4x5, 35 millimeter equivalents and things like that.
Okay, good to know.
There's a lot out there. It's really handy. And I guess the other thing to know about large format photography is 5.6 aperture is really fast.
Yeah, you're probably not going to find too many f1.4 large format lenses.
Not that I even know of, and I'm sure if they are, they're massive.
Yeah, they would have to be massive. Yeah.
you're using ISO 3 film, and you're stopping down, I imagine, to f8, f16. What are your exposure times?
Oh, I'm stopping down to f22 usually. I mean, the optimal on a lot of these lenses, you're looking around f22, especially some of the lenses I'm using are the Schneider G Clairons. Were actually a reproduction lens, so they don't actually get sharp across the frame until past f16. But once they get sharp across the frame, the razor sharp, really nice.
But f16 is physically larger on a lens like that, so you're not getting diffraction, right?
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you start getting diffraction past f32. You know, you stop down to f64. That's when you're starting to get issues.
So, what are your exposure times with that extra slow film and those extra slow apertures?
Well, I mean, when you're talking, if you're just going by a sunny 16 rule, I mean, on a sunny day, 1/3. I mean, you've stopped down to f22. That's only a 1 second.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. In my mind, there were 2 minute exposures, but you're right.
Well, I mean, they absolutely can be. I mean, you know, when it's not sunny out, you're inside and other light, they can certainly be that long, and reciprocity certainly comes into it. You know, I've got that calculator out all the time.
I was looking at your portfolio, and it's beautiful, by the way, on your website.
Thank you.
The photos are just, I feel like I could step into them. They're just so beautiful. I can, but I can see that a couple of them were shot in there's the one in a factory or in a port. I imagine those were some longer exposure times.
Yes, that was the Port of Johnstown, just locally here. But yeah, I mean, some of those are, you're looking at minutes to exposure.
And that is such a beautiful picture. I don't know what to say. The pipes and they glow, and it's a beautiful photograph. So thank you for letting me see that.
Oh, thank you. I mean, it's definitely inspired by Brzezinski, I can say.
Yeah. Well, this might be a good spot to take a little break and make sure our conversation saves, because we all know that we have technical glitches here and there on this show. So let's just take a quick break and make sure everything has saved. And we'll be right back.
Come with me back to 1992. I was 19 years old, and a World's Fair came to my scruffy Tennessee town. I got a part-time job there making a ridiculous $15 an hour that morphed into an 80-hour-a-week gig. Because I lived in my parents' house and had no time for a social life, I had quite a sum saved up by the time the fair ended. What's a 19-year-old photo nerd going to do with a couple of thousand dollars burning a hole in his pocket? I'll buy a camera, of course. I pored over months' worth of popular photography and modern photography magazines, weighing my choices and my budget. One camera rose to the top, a Mamiya 645. The ads called it the ultimate camera, with handling like a 35mm SLR and a negative almost as big as a Hasselblad's. I added it up. With a 645 body, waist level and prism finders, 80mm and 55mm lenses, and a donkey bag, I could just cover it. Off to the local camera store I went with my barely used checkbook in my pocket. Glad to see my friend behind the counter, I said with a swagger, "I want a Mamiya 645. He didn't miss a beat. "No, you don't. I don't? Have you ever used one?" he asked. "I've never even seen one in real life." He went to the back of the store and came back with the object of my desire, an M645 with an 80mm f1.9 lens and an eye-level prism. "Here, try this on," he said. I would like to say it was beautiful, but it wasn't. It was much bigger than it looked in the ads, heavier too. As I brought it to my eye, I noticed that there is really no good way to hold it. Why hadn't the magazines told me the 645 was an ergonomic nightmare? I'll tell you why. It's because I didn't read the articles. I only saw the ads. In my defense, the ads had pictures of cool photographers shooting sexy models. The articles just had words and charts. I wish more stores had the kind of customer service I received in that local camera store. The guy behind the counter knew I was a Minolta user with a few good lenses. He also asked a few questions and learned that I had just taken a job with the University of Tennessee school newspaper. I went home with a Minolta X700 motor drive and a beautiful 85mm f1.7 to go with the 28, 50, and 200 I already had at home. The kit served me much better at the paper than a clunky medium format camera would have. The check I wrote was much smaller, too. But that's not the end of the story. I never really got that Mamiya out of my head. A year or two later, I found a good deal on a Mamiya C220 TLR with 80mm and 50mm lenses to whet my medium format appetite. That was a great camera that I used to make some great photos and a few bucks. A year or two after that, I found myself working at a TV station taking some headshots with my faithful C220. The station manager said, "You know, we should buy a good camera for things like this. What do you recommend?" The next day, I called B&H with a purchase order for an M645 with the same kit I had picked out years ago, plus a 145mm soft focus portrait lens. The 645 shines on a tripod in a studio. I eventually sold my 220 to a co-worker and used the station's M645 for a few months before changing jobs. 30-something years later, I started thinking about my sweet old C220. I reached out to the guy who bought it to see if he possibly still had it. He did, and agreed to sell it back to me. Then he said, "Remember that old medium format SLR the station had? Well, it ended up at my house. I'll throw it in for the price of the light seal kit I never installed. Deal. The Mamiya 645 really is a good camera for an older, slower me. While the Prism Finder is still an ergonomic nightmare, the Wasteable Finder is a joy. One odd thing, it has an electronic shutter and won't work without a battery, but there's no built-in light meter, unless you use the awful eye-level prism. If you insist on using that finder, I suggest finding yourself a left-hand grip made for the camera. It's clunky for right-handed folks and sort of blocks the shutter speed dial, but it makes the camera easier to handle. Everyone goes on about how great the Mamiya C-Core 80mm f1.9 is, and it is, but I really love the 55mm f2.8. My copy is very sharp from f4 on. I have taken some great landscapes through that lens. I don't take a lot of portraits, so the 145 soft focus lens is pretty much useless. For a little reach, I also found a 210 on the bay. It's only a bit less useless. I'll be using my old 645 and mostly the 55 for Bob St. Cyr's new 12 on film photo group. The January roll is in the can and the photos came out great, as they really should from a camera I've been pining for more than 40 years. So if this odd little love story has a moral, it's never give up on the one that got away.
And we are back. So during the break, we were talking about, Larry brought up, there's a dance, the dance to large formats. So can you explain that to us, Trevor?
Yeah, I suppose some of us are better at the dance than others, but I mean, essentially the process being, you have to set your camera up on a good sturdy tripod, get your framing set up, which can be complicated for some because, I mean, it is inverted on the back of the camera, although it's not as bad as a TLR if you're not used to the waist level finders, it's a bit better than that. But so once you have your shot set up, the lens shutter is open on a preview mode, wide open, to get your framing and focus. And then once you've got that set, what you should be doing is turning the preview off, stopping your lens down, and then cocking the shutter, testing your shutter and shutter and make sure that everything works. So, you cock it, test your shutter speed, make sure everything's working as it should, re-cock it, put your film holder in the back there, pull out your dark slide, then actually expose, replace your dark slide and flip it over so you've indicated that you've exposed it, and pull it out, and you're done. Of course, there's times where you forget that you've left your lens on preview and you're exposing the whole time. I did that on the weekend. So you really do have to be careful and watch what you're doing as you go through the process, for sure.
Do you have any happy accidents, accidental double exposures that turn out great or anything like that?
I actually have not done an accidental double exposure yet on large format. And unfortunately, no happy accidents. Mm-hmm. Everything is just movement I don't want so far.
Right.
So do you have anything like a special checklist that you look through before you go to take a shot, or you just run through it in your head?
I just run through it in my head, but I am looking to write more stuff down. I actually, for Christmas, I got this really good large format logbook that I asked for. I forget who the author is, but it's really nice in that it sets everything out. You can set your film speed, all the exposure information, weather, location, and actually record your shots. For the 4x10 camera, I've numbered my film holders, 1 and 2, and A and B on front and back, so that I actually have a better logging system of knowing what I've shot, when, and how. Because in the past, it's basically been all my film holders are used. So, they're marked up by all sorts of people, white out, and they're just a mess. So I think I may actually document those better as well. It's, I do need a better process.
Yeah, something to work on.
Oh, for sure.
It's like everything else. With time, it gets more fluid and more habit.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So it's I am working on perfecting that. I'm getting there.
Yeah, I mean, you've only been shooting large format for what, like a year, 2 years?
It's been about a year now. Yeah.
A year, yeah. But it's so you're still fresh in the game. Lots of time to improve and hone.
Exactly.
So what would you say to someone who would say, oh, boy, I'd like to try large format, but, oh, man, it's got to be a too big a pain in the butt to really do.
I mean, especially if you're able to pick up a field camera 4x5, when you're looking at a couple lenses, a 4x5 camera, some film holders, you're actually taking up less space and weight than an SLR kit with a few lenses. So, I mean, space-wise, size-wise, it's really not that big a deal. And I also find, too, I get a bit lost when I'm shooting, like, even a 36 exposure roll of film on a 35mm camera. I mean, not to mention shooting digital when you can shoot thousands of exposures. It's just, like, it's overwhelming. There's too much stuff, and you know, I don't feel like I'm getting the quality in. But when you're shooting large format, you know, if you've got five or six shots, you really put the time into composing and exposing right, and you're getting a lot better hit rate, right? And it's just, it feels a lot more satisfying, you know. You don't have to shoot as much, you're getting better quality, and I don't know, I feel it a lot more, it's a lot more satisfying, and it's a lot more about the process. So it is different, but it's enjoyable in that way, I find, and it's really not that overwhelming, and it sort of reinforces a lot of the knowledge that you need for other types of photography,
right?
So I'm not the only one that hates a 36 roll.
No, I'd love a 12 if I could get it.
I know. Oh, yeah.
I wish you could buy them too.
I know. I remember the 12s and I missed them.
I know I did have a roll of HP 5 and 12 at one point, and that was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway. So, yeah. So when you're not shooting your large format, what are you shooting then?
So, I mean, my digital is a Fuji GFX. So that's what I'm shooting typically in that case. And that's what I use for digitizing my negatives as well. So the medium format digital, it's, you know, lovely, lovely camera, great files. Can't say enough good stuff about it. I do have my 35 millimeters in some medium format, but I mean, I don't pick those up as often. I mean, that's Nikon Fs and Nikon F2. F2 is definitely my favorite 35 millimeter SLR. But yeah, it's mostly large format. I mean, what can I say? I picked up a Sigma DP1 Merrill as well, just sort of as a point and shoot pocket camera to have a digital with me at all times, because I mean the GFX is big, so that's what I'm shooting right now.
Okay, cool. Anything else you want to talk about? Where do you find all these bargains you're always telling us that we need?
It's just knowing what you're looking for and keeping an eye out, you know, and shopping around. Facebook Marketplace, Kijiji, eBay, Yahoo Japan Auction. That's always a good one. You know, there's so many formats and just different places out there. I mean, my 5x7 I got off eBay from a seller in the States, and I just put like a half price offer bid on it, and I got it. You know, it's just, you got to know what you're looking for and just put some offers out there.
Those are my favorite eBay buys. The one where you put in an offer and don't expect to win. And then it comes out of the blue that you owe money.
Or, oh, no, yeah. I won.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, darn. Guess I'm going to get camera.
I didn't think I was actually going to win that one.
Yeah.
Do you have a 5x7 enlarger? Or, you said you had a 4x5, right?
Yeah, I do have a 4x5 that I have to set up. I don't have the space for it at the moment. But I mean, I shouldn't say that. I do have a old school wooden 5x7 enlarger that I found cheap that I do plan on rigging up at some point. but that'll need some work.
Great. So do you plan on building yourself a dark room here in the near future, or?
It's in the plans. Got lots of house renovations to do before we get there, but it's in the plans long term.
Well, while you've got the walls open, that's the time to put in the plumbing.
Well, that's it for sure.
Yes.
Yes. Anyway, well, I guess that probably will wrap us up for tonight, I guess, unless you have anything else.
No, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I really enjoyed it.
And folks, do yourself a favor and go to Trevor's website. Look at his photos. I am not kidding. They are really beautiful.
Yeah, please do. That would be great.
Yes, Trevor, what is your website for everybody listening?
So it's trevormunier.com. So trevormunier.com.
Awesome.
Let's say, sorry.
Go ahead, Jake.
I was just going to say, that's a new website, right? It's quite well done. Definitely should check that out.
I revamped everything. I had a different URL and everything previously, but I've sort of redone it all for my large format stuff. The search engine optimization still isn't quite working, so you really do need the URL to get there. So check it out.
That's worth seeking out. It's a beautiful website.
Just so you know, it might make you feel better. Google did find it for me.
Oh, it did. Okay, yes. Great.
No worries.
And do you have social media that you would like to share?
I do have an Instagram right now. And that's about it. I don't use it all that frequently, but it's trevor.munier.
Okay. You don't sound that excited about social media.
not particularly, no. I really don't care for it.
I don't either. Everybody just keeps coming out with, there's this new, and it's like, no.
Yep.
No more.
We've got enough.
The website, exactly. The nice website. That's the interface.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice clean interface with no other junk that's clogging up the feed.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. I really worked hard to make it clean and easy to use.
Yeah, you can tell for sure.
Yeah. So, anyway, I guess thanks for coming on, Trevor. It was good to chat again. We'll have to do it again.
Yeah absolutely
Yeah, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, thank you for the invite, really appreciate it.
Absolutely, anytime. Would love to have you on in the future.
Yeah, just because none of us do any large format, it's just nice to talk to somebody else who does.
Absolutely.
I mean I've got friends that got me into it, so there's a lot of us out there.
I was shooting 110 last week, so that says that.
10 times?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
It is. Those are such cool little cameras.
It is the cutest camera in the world, but that's a tangent.
Yeah. The other end of the spectrum.
Right. Yeah. We'll have to have a 110 show some night.
I think we better.
Yeah. Anyway. So we'll catch you again, everybody, and stay positive and embrace the green. Bye.
Hey, guys.
All righty. Let's get our socials out because everybody wants to know exactly where they can find us. So you can find me on the Facebook group. Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast group. You can also find me on the Frugal Film Project group. You can find me on Instagram at Sherry Christensen Photography. That's SHERRYCHRISTENSEN Photography. I know it's long. Sorry, I should have thought about that before I did it. Larry?
My name is Larry Effler. My Instagram handle is Larry Effler. And my Facebook page is Larry Effler. I'm just not very imaginative.
Sasha?
Yeah, so you can find me on as well the Embrace the Grain Photography podcast page. I post there. I post on the Frugal Film Project as well. And my two personal Instagrams for my digital are Evil Kitten Productions. And for my film, it is EKP Film Photo.
And Jake?
You can find me on Instagram at Jake Rose Photo and in the Embrace the Grain Photography Facebook group.
That's great. See you all in a couple weeks. Bye.
Bye.